This episode is brought to you by our friends and sponsors at Imperial Organic Yeast. Casey at Imperial tells me they're expanding their guaranteed in-stock program for commercial customers. Imperial now has 10 strains that are guaranteed to ship to commercial breweries from both their East and West Coast production facilities. This gives commercial customers additional flexibility to brew what they want, when they want, and helps Imperial maintain their commitments to quality, transparency, and service. You know we love Imperial Organic Yeast. On the homebrew side, my stir plate is dusty because of their leading pitch rate of 200 billion cells per easy-to-open package. Ask your local homebrew store about Imperial Organic Yeast. Check them out at imperialyeast.com. That's imperialyeast.com. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, March 4th, 2021. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, homebrewer Nick Johnson shares his extensive experiment comparing Graf, brewed with apple juice, 4 malt extracts, and 5 different yeast strains. This one was a lot of fun and very delicious. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs and our brewer's logbooks. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. Thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Financial supporters, this Friday we'll see an early release of the 4th show that Steve and I shot the other day. This one features what Steve is calling his Daisy Cutter Sour Belgian Strong Ale. It's a tart and tasty beer that weighs in at nearly 12% ABV, which is explains the bomb reference. Thank goodness it was the last beer of the day. And I plan to release to financial supporters a bonus video this week, along with the early release of that video. This video shows how I make smoked jalapeno powder, which is it's really it's so good. I added that stuff to a box of a cornbread muffin mix, along with some cut up fresh jalapenos. And, man, it was tasty. So that Patreon subscribers have that coming to them this Friday. And many thanks to our Patreon supporters. If you remember, you're helping to fill the gap left when that heartless online retailer cut us off from the affiliate program. I still don't understand the justification there. Anyway, oh, well, water under the bridge. Let's take a look into the mailbag after our hop sampler episode with the Swedish hops, where we used Google Translate, and it mysteriously inserted the word sturgeon in a few places. We heard from some folks with explanations. Jens, I hope I'm pronouncing your name properly, Jens on Facebook commented that the word is probably store. S-T-O with an umlaut or R. I can't even pronounce just single letters properly. The word is probably store, and in hop growing, it is the pole that the hops grow up on. But it also means sturgeon. Jens says, Swedish is fun and beer is life. Jens also posted a pic of the beautiful hop harvesting painting that we talked about on the show, and you can see that conversation thread if you look under the post about that episode on our Facebook page, facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks very much, Jens. Frederick also writes in from Sweden saying, thank you for a very amusing episode. I'd just like to say that we don't have fish on the hops farm. And he says it's Stror, S-T-R-O with an umlaut, A-R. It's the long wooden poles that hops grow on. Not sure what they are called in English, but they are not fish. Thank you again for a very funny show. Thanks, Frederick. And thanks to everybody in Sweden for being so tolerant and patient with our pronunciations and such. By the way, I shared some of each of the hops with Steve, so I hope that he's inspired to brew something wonderful with those. Mark in Colorado commented on the behind-the-scenes video of my coconut midnight wheat stout on Patreon. Mark says, I enjoy the behind-the-scenes videos as much as your YouTube videos, maybe even more. Well, thanks, Mark. Just behind-the-scenes videos are worth my Patreon donation. Wow. I tried a coconut ale a while back, Mark says, and it didn't turn out because now I know the potassium metabisulfites, or fates, killed it. I used a lot more coconut than you used. Thanks, Mark. If you haven't seen that video yet, I blame the additives in my generic sweetened coconut for the slowness in bottle conditioning that beer. It turned out fine after a while, but it took a while. It turns out there was essentially a yeast stabilizer on the ingredient list on the coconut. I want to try using a fresh coconut, just cracking it open and processing the coconut stuff myself one day. It looks fun and maybe a little dangerous. And maybe fodder for not only the behind-the-scenes video, but the disaster show as well, maybe. And finally, listener Jason adds to the discussion about priming beer without transferring to a bottling bucket that many people have chimed in on. Jason says, I'm a bit of a control freak, so I actually use a Child's Tylenol dispenser to put 10 milliliters of solution into each bottle before bottling. It's painstaking, but it works, and it's consistent. My fellow club members, Mark says, shout out to homebrewers of Peoria, hops, have commented on how well conditioned my beers are, so I fear changing to the simpler bucket method. Thanks to everybody who's weighed in on that thread. Let's talk about our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa, who are now offering on highgravitybrew.com the Spike Solo 20 configuration of their Warthog electric system. It features a spike kettle, a Blickman boil coil, riptide pump, and the awesome Warthog EBC-130 controller. But it takes single vessel brewing a step past the bag by adding a solo brewing basket. It's essentially a stainless steel insert that you use instead of a bag. Very cool. It's one of tons of electric brewing systems on highgravitybrew.com, and you can use the build your own brewing system feature on highgravitybrew.com to configure a system that's just right for you. Tons of options. From 5 gallons to 2 barrels, highgravitybrew.com can take the pain out of propane. I've had my Warthog system for a long time. It makes brewing fun and takes a lot of the guesswork out of figuring out strike temperatures, amounts of water needed for step mashes, worrying about dropping mash temperatures. You can find your perfect system, your perfect electric system, at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. That's highgravitybrew.com. Let's talk to a Nick Johnson about his very ambitious and successful experiment with yeast, malt, and graph. Nick Johnson, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you, James. I'm happy to be here. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has. And in fact, it's been so long that I've forgotten that you'd been on. You were with us back in 2015, and you sent us some delicious fall ciders, ciders with ingredients like actual pumpkin and pumpkin spice and things like that, and we had a fun tasting with that. And so when you sent me the email saying that you had done this ambitious experiment, your name, and you'll forgive me, sometimes I'm tempted to make my wife wear a name tag, so don't be offended. but once the gear's locked in, I said, oh yeah, okay, we've talked before. So you have done, and I mean, you outlined this experiment in your initial email, And you wanted me to, you wanted to send me, I think, or get with me to get me like all of the sample beers from your, from this experiment. And it was just too ambitious. So we pared them down, but talk about the experiment and the scope of what you have done.
Well, unlike my first experiment, I wanted to do something a little more scientific. I got the idea. We have a cider company locally in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma City Cider Company. And he kind of made a recommendation that when you're dealing with ciders, it's predominantly the yeast that are really contributing a lot of the flavor. So I wanted to do different yeast comparisons, but I also paired them with a malt. So each cider, I used four different malts and then five different yeasts in every possible combination. So I ended up with a total of, you know, 20 different ciders at the end of the experiment.
Now, these are ciders with malt. So so would you characterize this as a graph? Is that what they're called?
Yeah, I think that would be appropriate to call them a graph. I know you guys had done a graph episode earlier where they brewed them a little more traditionally like a beer. This was really just how I would make a cider, but I just added, boiled and added some liquid malt extract just to get a sense how that would change the flavor profile for each one.
And graph is a style that, a quote-unquote style, that came out of a Stephen King series of books, I think. Hey. And I can't remember the name of the series, unfortunately.
Dark Tower, I think.
Oh, there you go. People can stop screaming at their podcast device now. So, so yeah, it's basically a beer with either apple juice or other fruit juice added, essentially, right?
Right. Correct. Yep.
And are there any hops in these?
In mine, no. I really wanted to kind of narrow down the effect of the malt and the yeast on the cider. So there's no hops in these. It's just liquid malt, yeast, and then the cider.
So you use the same apple juice through the whole thing.
Yes. And I actually, on the recommendation of the cider company here, I just used Musselman's cider that you can get at Walmart or Sprouts or anything like that. His experience has been that the actual cider composition doesn't really affect the final flavor as much as the yeast does. Huh. So off the shelf, Musselman's cider, not spiced, you know, and there's no preservatives or anything like that, and obviously.
And the and so you're there's a kind of a grid between how many yeasts and how many malts.
It was five different yeasts and four malts for 20 total.
Okay.
And then for our tasting today, I tried to pick a sampling that kind of encompassed the whole breadth of the experiment, because there's not a huge difference going down a column or across a row.
And so I've got six samples in front of me. Now, how did you do this? You didn't make 25-gallon batches, did you?
No, I did it in four batches. And I have probably about a dozen of, actually cider bottles from Sprouts, just glass cider bottles. So I would brew them in each test. I would brew a 5-gallon batch and then put it in five separate 1-gallon containers and then add the yeast from there.
Oh, okay. So. Okay. That seems more manageable.
Yeah. I don't know where I would put a, yeah. Yeah.
You just get a bunch of friends, a bunch of thirsty friends.
I think the bottling was the worst part. That was a lot of bottling.
So talk about your process. I mean, talk about the recipe, talk about how, you know, talk about your brew day, talk about how it all came together.
So again, because I wanted to really isolate the effects of the yeast and the malt. It's a really simple recipe. Each batch, in a 5-gallon total batch, would have 3 pounds of liquid malt extract boiled for about 30 minutes and 2.5 gallons of water. I added that to 2.5 gallons of that Musselman's apple cider. And then at that point, I added some yeast nutrients and then divided them into their 5 different gallon containers. And then in each case, they spent about 3 weeks fermenting before they were bottled.
And what were your original gravities and final gravities? Did you see a difference between the batches?
It was incredibly minimal, and it was very close to what the calculator said. So they only ranged between an original gravity of 1.047 up to about 1.050, and then pretty small variation, right about 1.012 to 1.01. So pretty negligible variation across the experiment.
And what have you said the malts yet and the yeasts?
I have not yet. So
Good, because I couldn't remember. Nick, I'm getting old, and I've been in the house for a year. It's starting to wear on me.
Well, I used predominantly dry yeast. Did you want me to go over them?
Yeah, please.
Okay, I used predominantly dry yeast, WB06, the wheat yeast, a Kolsch yeast, which was a White Labs yeast. It was the only liquid yeast. Then I did US05, the American ale, SO4, the English ale, and the Belle Saison by Danstar. And then I crossed those with wheat liquid malt extract, Pilsner, porter, and rye.
Oh my. So w this may be a spoiler, but which had the more variations, the differences between the malts or the differences between the yeasts?
We did a little taste test last night, and I think they have a somewhat equal contribution. I would say maybe 60-40 in favor of the yeast. It seems like the yeast had a bigger variation than the malt, but you can definitely tell the difference, especially between like the Pilsner and the rye. There's a pretty big difference in the taste profile.
Yeah, you would think so.
Right. Yep.
Okay. Well, I've got six beers here. So where should I start?
Do you want to start with sample 1E? This will be
Sure.
the WB06 and wheat liquid malt extract.
WB06 and is that remind us again which yeast that is.
This is the wheat yeast, and this is with the wheat malt.
Okay. Smells good. Smells apple-y.
That was one of the first things we noticed from our taste test as well. It's kind of a citrusy apple aroma. It's pretty clean.
Oh my. Oh. I'm gonna be saying a lot of that. It's spicy. You can definitely taste the malt. And to me, there's no spice in this, right?
No, there's not at all.
That's really good. I could drink that all day. There's a teeny bit of astringency, and I'm assuming that's coming from the apple juice, like a tartness
Yes.
from the apple juice. But that may compound the kind of, and I'm not familiar with as familiar with spices, but I don't know if it's a clove or, there's kind of a pie spice. It's kind of pie tasting, sort of like an
Right.
apple pie, maybe.
Yeah. That's actually a note that we had last night. And it was odd the it's when we first drank them, when I was bottling them, that astringency wasn't quite as prominent, but after a few weeks now, actually a few months of being in the bottle, it seems like that came out a little more.
Well, it's not bad. It's not a bad, astringency. It's just a kind of a tart apple,
Right.
kind of thing. It's like if you get a green apple, off the tree, before it's ripe, that kind of tartness. That's delicious. I would drink that all, well, not all day, but
Right.
So what's the ABV on these?
These are, I believe, right around 4.6.
Oh,
So,
well, you could almost drink that all day.
yeah. And this one, we in our taste test, we both testers annotated that this would be a good summer drink.
Yeah,
So,
for sure.
yeah.
Did you notice any kind of and what was your pitch rate in all these? How did you
It was.
calculate that?
It would have actually been pretty high, so probably about double what you would have done for a 5 gallon batch. So,
Okay.
maybe even more than that, because it would have been half of a sachet per gallon. So
Okay.
slightly more
And for a reference point, the little packets are usually around what, 10 or 11 grams,
Yes.
and in the hop sampler and the malt sampler for a 1 gallon batch, which is about 3 quarts, around 3 liters, something like that. I use 3 grams. So just as a random reference point. And I can't remember, I think I came up with that just because, you know, I divided a packet by 3 and three grams sounded good to me and it worked. So I stuck with it. And in that case, you know, with that series, we're not wanting to get any yeast characteristics. So, you know, it doesn't, with USO5, it doesn't matter as much.
Right.
So the wheat yeast with the wheat malt with the apple juice is a good pairing. It's delicious, which, you know, we might hope for.
I would kind of have expected that to be a good combination. So, and of my two testers, one who generally tends to be more of a Pilsner drinker, this was his favorite.
Huh, okay. So it's an entry-level experimental graph.
Yeah, yep.
Okay, where should we go next?
Let's go down the line to 2B. This will be the Pilsner malt and the Kolsch ale yeast.
Oh, okay. So one would predict that this would be fairly clean.
Yes.
And Pilsner-esque. Ooh, a lot of foam in this one with a golden color. The first one was a nice golden color as well.
Right, yep.
Of course, I'm just tasting mostly foam now, but the tartness is subdued on this one.
Both testers got that this was much less sour. Described it as clean and dry with a little bit of a golden raisin or quinoa flavor to it that wasn't detectable in the other one.
Huh. I'm not as familiar with quinoa as I might be if I were more adventurous. I think for a long time I thought it was quinoa. So
right.
That shows you my level of culinary expertise in that area.
We also have this as being slightly maltier than the previous one.
Yeah. Yeah, now that I've got down to the beer, to the liquid, there's a kind of a nuttiness.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm. Would that be the quinoa aspect?
Yes.
But it's also good. It doesn't have as much character as the first one. There's not the spiciness that was in the first one. It's more of just kind of a straightforward, you know, kind of Pilsner-esque, you know, beverage with some grainy taste in it, which is good. But yeah, another one that I would certainly drink.
My neighbor Zach described this as the one that had the most consistent flavor profile from taste to aftertaste.
Huh. Yeah, it's pretty even.
Pretty even, yep.
Were there any, maybe I shouldn't ask this yet, but were there any horrible surprises, any bad clashes?
there really weren't, which was actually really surprising because I would have expected that at least with maybe some of the porter combinations, but most of them were at least drinkable. Even though I did probably pick some of the better ones for this experiment.
Yeah, I asked you to pare them down into kind of a representative example of the wide range of, you know, flavors that you got from the thing. And I attempted to get with Steve, but for various reasons, you know, weather, his health, his busyness, you know, when we could, and I didn't want to have you send two sets of bottles. So, you know, people are just going to have to bear with my, with my dad jokes and my, poor, tasting, notes. But Steve would enjoy these, definitely, if I can speak for him in that manner. So where's next?
Let's move to 2C. This is going to be the American ale yeast, USO5, and the Pilsner malt.
Okay.
And surprisingly, even though I had a Pilsner drinker, This is the only one that didn't receive a favorite vote.
Ooh. So with American ale yeast, it's still going to be clean, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Although the Kolsch, I think one of the characteristics of the Kolsch yeast may be a little bit more fruity maybe than, say, like a straight, lager yeast.
Right.
And what temperature did you ferment these at?
These were all kept pretty consistently between 68 and 72 degrees.
Okay. There's more going on the nose to me than the other two for some reason.
That's what we have too, which was kind of surprising going from Kolsch Pilsner to American Ale Pilsner.
Mm. Oh. This may be my favorite so far. So I'll give you a favorite there. How about that?
We had a lemon citrus notes, floral aroma notes, green apple, and one taster compared it to a Pinot Grigio.
Huh. Yeah, the tartness from the apple is back, but not as tart as in the first example with the wheat. But there's kind of a darker note, too.
And with this one, the malt actually seemed pretty transparent to us.
Hmm.
Seemed like it had less of a malty contribution than the Kolsch.
I don't know. I get more of a huskiness, maybe.
Interesting.
From the grain. So I may have to disagree with you there. But
okay.
But it's good. I like it. Yeah, to me, the tartness on this one and the apple character is more balanced than the first one. The first one, the apple and the tartness was like way up front.
Uh-huh.
And with that spiciness, it really accentuated that whole thing. The second one with the Kolsch yeast and the Pilsner malt, it was kind of flat. But this one is a kind of a combination between the first two with an added little layer of just a teeny bit of slight of the darkness character to it, if that makes sense.
It does. Did you get we had a big note that the Kolsch added a more complex flavor than the US05. Is that what you've noticed?
Huh. I don't know. I've tasted the Kolsch example again, and it's kind of brighter than the US05, but I don't know if it's more complex. It's different. But I think with the addition of the tartness from the apple combined with the kind of earthier notes from the malt or the yeast or whatever's going on with the US05, I don't know. It's a team. I don't know. I would be on the fence as far as which is more complex.
Which is more complex?
On that one. But good. Like I say, that may be my favorite so far. So what's next? This is fun. I just get to drink. It's Friday afternoon. Woohoo!
Next, let's move to that. It's going to be sample 3D. This is the English ale yeast, SO4, and the porter malt.
Oh.
And this was the one that was the most popular.
Huh. Okay. Now, it's obviously darker. It's got a nice little foam. Now, with the obviously, my prediction is more kind of caramel notes.
Yep.
With more kind of a fruitiness from the yeast, but let's see what the tongue says. The nose, it's the most distinctive yet.
That's what we noticed as well. And it was described as having almost a bit of a molasses aroma.
Mm-hmm. That's good. It's an interesting combination. I don't know. I didn't know really what to expect with the combination of the darker malts and the brightness of the apple.
Apple, right.
And there's some tartness in that one as well.
Yes.
I don't get as much fruitiness maybe from the yeast that I expected.
We noticed more caramel, fig, and praline flavors than the more of a fruity flavor.
Mm-hmm.
This one also seemed to have the perception of being less carbonated than the other ones.
Huh. Well, that's interesting because it's a weird balance. I don't know what to think about it. I mean, I think I still like the USO 5 one
the
better. Just because it's not as it's more familiar, maybe.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying that this one is bad. I'm just saying it's not my favorite.
Maybe it was just popular because it was more notable.
It's different. Maybe was it the 20th sample? People, the ratings keep getting more and more favorable as you go to. I don't know. I like it. But I think, and it's not, it's kind of a sort of a tart caramel apple kind of a thing.
Right.
But not as dark, you know, as the caramel apple that would actually be around a caramel apple. But there are notes there, like at the end of it. But the tartness from the apple juice kind of scrubs that off almost immediately so that there's no lingering, you know, dark beer notes at the end. Huh. That's interesting. But well made. I think all of these so far have been, you know, I don't detect any fermentation flaws or any contamination or anything like that. So good job there. What's your secret? What are your tips, your sanitization tips? What are your steps?
You know, I'm pretty methodical. I use StarSan and PBW throughout. I just make sure I don't have anything really, really distinct out of the ordinary. I'm just, I guess, maybe better attention to detail than what I had when I was first starting. Having a spray bottle helps with the StarSan.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of coat everything throughout the process with it.
I find that rinsing things as soon as you get done using them, like tubing, especially vinyl tubing, and fermenters and jars and bottles, you know, especially bottles after you decant them, just as soon as you, you know, before you leave the serving area, turn around to the kitchen sink and rinse out with hot water. You know, just simple things like that as a preemptive measure, I think, is, you know, one tip that I give, especially starting out brewers. Let's take a break from the tasting to talk about our friends and sponsors, Ricky and Kelly from Groenfell Meadery in Vermont. Ricky tells me they're about to launch the next sour in their series called The Sour Mead Maker, a Raspberry Lime Ricky. Very appropriate. And if you've been following Groenfell's Instagram and Facebook posts, you know they've been having a competition to design the label. And man, there are some talented mead drinkers out there. The artwork is pretty impressive. I don't know if talented people are drawn to mead or if mead just makes you talented. Ricky says Nate at the meadery invented the Raspberry Lime Ricky just to see caricatures of Ricky the Mead Maker. You know we love Groenfell. If you go to groenfell.com, you can see an awesome selection of Groenfell and Havoc meads that are drinkable, most sessionable, and always delicious. And Groenfell is shipping them across the country. Check them out and thank them for their support of this podcast at groenfell.com. That's GroenFell. So where do we go next?
Let's do the 4B2, which is going to be the wheat yeast again, WB06, and the rye malt.
This one's happy.
I think both of these last two were, a little overcarbonated. But we used carb tabs, so I don't know why that would be.
Let me throw this in the sink. Hold on just a second. You know, I bragged on your brewing process, and then we have a gusher.
Yeah, and both of these batches were like this. Everything with the rye malt was like this.
Huh. And you followed the same procedure of sanitizing the malt and everything, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't smell funky. It doesn't smell bad.
Maybe that... Perhaps there was some more residual sugar in it at bottling, but the time frame was the same.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting. And you took gravity readings at the end of it. So this is the wheat yeast with the rye malt.
Yes, it is. That's correct.
Okay. You've got the tartness from the apples, the flavor from the apples, and then, you know, I'm always saying that that I, you know, or a lot of times I say that I don't get a lot of the spiciness that people talk about when they, you know, when they brew with rye. But I think I do get it in this one.
Which is funny because both of my taste testers who don't have a lot of experience with rye malts also described it as being sharper and spicier than the others.
Yeah. But there's also kind of a malty, almost caramely character at the end of it too. So it's more complex than just, you know, these other malts that we've been tasting.
And that's the note we have too, that this had the most complex aftertaste. And it was described as malted apples and cranberries.
Huh. And it's slightly darker than, say, the wheat.
Right.
This may be my new favorite.
this was my personal favorite.
Despite making a mess on my countertop here, I think it's more complex than the USO5 one. Maybe not as complex as the porter, although the porter wasn't as happy a pairing as this one.
Right.
You know, there's a little bit of the spice. Maybe it's from the yeast. You know, maybe it's from the rye. But it all kind of goes together well. And, you know, I would recommend, especially on a small batch level, I would recommend, you know, this recipe and this process to the listeners out there. Because these are, you know, legitimately, you know, tasty, drinkable beverages. It's not, you know, like kind of a novelty thing that's just fun for half a pint and then you're,
right.
and then you're done.
Yeah, they're fairly quick and easy, pretty entry level way to start. So,
yeah, there's no, it's just a short. You said 30-minute boil, right? On the malt.
Yes, correct. Yep.
Okay. Well, I'm going to step over to the sink and do the last one. And this is the 4E5. Which one is this?
This is the one I actually expected to be my favorite pairing. This is the Belle Saison and rye malt.
Okay. All right, stand by. I'll be right back. This one was not as gushy as the first, as the other one. In fact, it fizzed a little bit, but it didn't come out of the bottle. The nose is more interesting than the previous rye. It's more kind of phenolic.
We had this also as being the most distinct aroma.
There's more fruity characteristics coming from this one than the previous rye beer.
We got strong notes of green apple and blue raspberry. Yeah, a lot of fruity notes.
Yeah, it is darker fruits. The appliness, the sort of tartness and the appliness has toned down. Yeah, there's. I would go in with kind of a blueberry kind of a thing. That's pretty good. I don't know if it's right up there with the previous rye beer. With the wheat yeast, so I think my three out of the tasting are the rye with the Belle Saison and the wheat, and then the USO5 with the Pilsner. How did I do?
the rye ones were popular. I was kind of expecting the Belle Saison rye to be a little more distinct than it was. But those were on the popular end.
Mm-hmm.
Odd that with Pilsner drinkers that USO5 and Pilsner wasn't a popular cider.
Huh. I'm going to go back and taste that one. That's pretty good. So are there any other standouts that you didn't send, or do they all kind of fall in along the same line at a certain point.
Yep. When we were tasting them back to back, there's when we had access to the whole grid, there were some pretty predictable changes in flavor. As you moved along yeast or moved along malts, there wasn't anything that was really shocking. I think the one that was kind of the most unique, maybe the least drinkable, was probably the Kolsch and the rye combination. So,
and why was that?
I think just maybe a lot of muddled flavors.
Out of all the yeasts, which was the favorite yeast, if you were to average kind of the results?
Looks like the wheat.
Okay. And then the rye was the favorite malt.
Yes, and that was a pretty close tie on that. The wheat was also a popular malt. And the porter malt, the SO4 and porter, was the most liked combination.
Well, this is a lot of fun.
It was a fun experiment.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. but I applaud your effort and sticking to it, and you know, doing the same thing, the same brew day, you know, over and over again is not the most interesting thing to do.
And it's the first time I've really tried to, like, isolate a variable at a time. So it was a good experiment.
Yeah. In doing, especially the hop samplers, you know, that's an easy, fairly easy, you know, brew day, because I can do each batch in like an hour and a half, something like that.
Right. But
in the malt sampler, since the boil is only 30 minutes, but I do the full 1 hour mash, you know, each one of those is like 2.5 hours. So, you know, that's a pretty long brew day for 3 6 packs of beer.
Right.
But you know, you get some music going, you know, you get some snacks in the kitchen, you, you get your process down, and
not a bad way to spend a Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah. So kudos. I mean, it was a lot of fun. And I think that, you know, I may need to take some notes on what I've tasted, and, you know, maybe it'll inspire, you know, some new experiments for me to do. And I hope it's inspired some of the listeners to try some of these combinations themselves.
It's so easy, and they were all pretty, at the very least, they were very drinkable.
Yeah. Yeah, so at the end of the day, you've got some good things to drink. No clunkers. There are no clunkers here.
the other thing is, I think some of these are actually pretty approachable for people that maybe don't really traditionally like beer. So a lot of these were pretty approachable.
Yeah, I agree. So what's next on you? Do you have any other experiments in your eyesights, in your sights?
You know, I've been trying to adapt some more complex ale recipes to kind of graphs like this. And we had emailed about this. I unknowingly used your old fruitcake recipe to make a cider. Didn't realize until I kegged it that it was actually your recipe. A Belgian triple fig graph that turned out really well. I actually used Belgian triple yeast, Pilsner malt, and figs in that. So I've just been trying to adapt some traditional ale recipes to ciders. Well, to, like, technically graphs right now.
Wow.
Most of them have turned out pretty well, honestly. I think it's pretty, it actually kind of simplifies the brewing process. And I think maybe a wider audience can actually appreciate them.
And of course, the variable that you don't have in here at all is hops.
Right.
So, you know, during that 30 minute, you know, boil of your malt, you know, you could, you know, throw some hops in there, or at least, you know, you could steep them in the hot wort afterwards, maybe preserve some of those delicate hop characters.
No, that's a great idea.
I think bringing in some fruity hop flavors in with, you know, some of this the rye and the you know, the characteristics that you get from that, and the, like, the maybe the wheat yeast. And it's, you know, and obviously it would go really well with the, you know, the American ale yeast,
right?
And the Pilsner malt, Yeah, I think it'd be really good to get some nice fruity characters from the apple juice as well as the hops. So there's a challenge for you.
Yeah, looking forward to it. It's been fun so far, especially kind of branching out into more complex recipes.
Well, awesome. Well, keep in touch. You know, let's not, you know, if you come up with something in the next, you know, 5 years, even sooner.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I appreciate all the beers and I appreciate all the work. And keep it up.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks again to Nick. That was a lot of fun. I'm sure it wasn't as much fun to brew and bottle all those samples, but it sure was worth it. And I appreciate very much Nick sharing the experiment and especially sharing those sample beers with me. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is brought by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voice, and we'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.